The nuclear crisis in Japan has triggered a new debate over what to do with nuclear waste here in the U.S. After all, the big problem at the Fukushima plant concerns the spent fuel in those reactors. The tsunami knocked out the power to the cooling system for those storage pools. It turns out that most of the 71,000 tons of nuclear waste in the U.S. is stored in water-filled cooling pools like the ones in Japan. So whatever happened to Yucca Mountain in Nevada? Wasn't our nuclear waste supposed to be stored there? Charles Forsberg is executive director of the Fuel Cycle Study at MIT, and he joins me in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if, in a way, what's happening in Japan could in some ways push the U.S. to deal with this issue. Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm not sure, but I certainly hope we would begin to get our act together. We've been going around in circles for several decades.
Well, as I said, three-quarters of the nuclear waste in the U.S. is stored in these pools like the ones in the reactors in Japan. And according to a story from the Associated Press today, some of them are overloaded with four times the amount of spent fuel they're supposed to contain, and they're well beyond their lifespan for the years they're supposed to be holding those rods as well. How vulnerable are they?
Currently, we think they're not too vulnerable, but it's still not an ideal situation. One would prefer to move the spent fuel at least to dry cask storage, which is a more robust storage form. However, ultimately, there is an agreement that the federal government will take the spent fuel, and the spent fuel was not to remain on site. It was to be disposed of by the federal government, which, of course, has not happened.
Describe to me these dry cask storages you talk about.
Dry cask storage could be viewed as sort of a large tin can that's about 15 feet high, about 6 feet in diameter, with 6 to 8 inch walls. Literally a big can.
And it sits on the ground of the power plant?
Yes, you build a parking lot with a very heavy foundation, and you just set them outside. And the can essentially protects against severe accidents or any external events.
How do they get the fuel rods from the pools to the cans?
In a refueling operation, of course, the fuel is moved from the reactor to the pools. And to fill up the cans, you put the cans in the same pool and transfer the spent fuel underwater to the cans, put on the lids, bolt them shut or weld them shut, and then transfer them outside.
I understand Fukushima has dry cask storage as well. Right? As well as the pools.
Yes. And of course, there was no concern about that. That was sitting on the backside of the plant, and everybody's sort of ignoring it because it's a non-issue.
Is the threat that terrorists might be able to get to that material, whether it's in the pools or the casks, and develop a weapon, is that something real that could happen?
I really don't think that's credible for two reasons. The first one, of course, is there's very high security forces. The second, particularly in the case of dry cask storage, is we're talking about 100-ton casks. This is not something you can drive down the road in with a pickup truck. You sort of need a rail car. So it's not something that's readily stealable.
Well, what happened to Yucca Mountain? The plan was to send all the nuclear waste there, and that dates back to 1987. But President Obama promised to cancel the project when he was running for president. And then last year, he told the Department of Energy to withdraw an application that it had submitted to the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What happened?
Essentially, it got caught into a political debate between different political parties where each party was trying to pin the tail on the donkey by moving the problems to the other party's area. And it's because it's been in the center of a political partisan debate, it has not gone forward. Associated with that is that Yucca Mountain was cited by decree of the U.S. Congress rather than asking for a volunteer site, as other countries have done.
But according to the New York Times today, there's still political support from Republicans and Democrats, but Senator Harry Reid, who's of course from Nevada, says the project is dead. But who's supposed to be in charge of dealing with the nation's nuclear waste?
The Department of Energy. But they have very limited authority to actually negotiate with a state. What has happened is you have a Congress of 435 members of Congress and 100 senators who are negotiating spent fuel deals, and that doesn't work. You need somebody with real authority to ask states if they're willing to accept a repository and make a deal.
It's also in the courts. In fact, this week, the U.S. Court of Appeals heard arguments in a case involving South Carolina and Washington, who've both sued, claiming the federal government has an obligation to accept the waste because some of it comes from the manufacture of nuclear weapons. Is the waste from nuclear weapons different from the waste from nuclear power? And what happens to it and who's responsible for it?
Weapons waste, of course, is solely the responsibility of the U.S. government. Some of the waste would have gone to Yucca Mountain. Most of the waste, most of the plutonium waste from weapons manufacture, however, is going to an operating geological repository that the United States built in New Mexico and that has been operating for an entire decade. We own a geological repository, but it's restricted strictly to weapons waste.
Remind us, though, if there was a Yucca Mountain storage facility for nuclear waste, what would it look like? How would it work? How would these be stored?
The waste would be stored in cans and then stored in tunnels approximately 1,000 feet underground. We wish to isolate the waste from mankind, which means you cannot leave it on the surface of the earth because of the normal events of climate change, violence, and war. So the goal is to put it at least 1,000 feet underground, isolated from man, isolated from the environment.
You're head of the fuel cycle study at MIT. You know how long this lasts. How long will this nuclear waste last? How long will it be dangerous? And is that a really good solution to bury it in the earth?
There have been lots of studies, and I think everybody who's looked at it agrees that deep disposal is the preferred option. The issue of how long it is toxic is not straightforward because radioactivity decays away with time. Generally, somewhere between around 10,000 years, the waste in terms of toxicity becomes similar to the toxicity of a heavy metal ore body of arsenic, cadmium, or lead. It still remains toxic for a longer period of time. Ultimately, the toxicity is controlled by the uranium, the natural uranium that's actually in the spent fuel, because uranium is a heavy metal like lead or arsenic.
We have thousands and thousands of tons of this waste. Are we running out of time to do something with it?
No. Generally, we generate about 2,000 tons of waste a year for the United States to produce 20% of our electricity. In terms of reactors, each reactor needs to buy two storage canisters per year, so the volumes are very, very small, and that makes it easy to manage in one sense. It's not very expensive to manage.
Charles Forsberg is executive director of the Fuel Cycle Study at MIT. When we come back, we'll talk about how the nuclear waste storage issue affects plants when they try to renew their licenses with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And later in the show, more than you ever thought there was to know about baseballs. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Charles Forsberg, executive director of the Fuel Cycle Study at MIT. We're talking about nuclear waste storage in the wake of the power plant crisis in Japan. The majority of the nuclear waste here is stored in those spent fuel pools at individual plants, some of them filled beyond capacity. Critics say they're vulnerable, but the plan to store all the waste at Yucca Mountain in Nevada is basically dead. And before the break, Charles, you talked about an alternative called dry cask storage. The 15-foot-tall cans can hold the spent fuel. Plants like Vermont Yankee, which just had its license renewed, have dry cask storage. But others like the Pilgrim plant in Massachusetts, whose license renewal is pending, don't. Should they be required to?
What determines dry cask storage today is when you run out of room in your pool. And then when you run out of room, you have to buy dry cask storage for the overflow. Of course, if the federal government waste program comes in operation, then, of course, all of these pools will be unloaded very quickly.
Well, how does cost play into this? Is it cheaper to store the spent fuel on site?
The cost is very small compared to the cost of electricity, so it's really not an issue of cost. It's an issue of policy. You can safely store spent fuel at the reactor site. You can store it in a centralized facility, or you can store it in a repository with the option to recover the spent fuel in the future. We have strongly recommended centralized storage, particularly for shutdown reactor sites, because we think that if you shut down a reactor, you should remove the spent fuel because the cost becomes significantly greater to store spent fuel at a shutdown site.
What do other countries do, like France, which has nearly 60 reactors? What do they do with their waste?
France recycles waste. Sweden and Germany plan on direct disposal. In both of these cases, however, the spent fuel is taken from reactors to centralized storage sites. in Sweden and in France and in Germany. We're sort of an outlier in that context that we have not developed a storage site for the spent fuel.
You mentioned that France recycles some of its waste, and I understand that that was supposed to be the plan with the waste in the U.S. as well, right?
Yes, that was the original plan, and that's why the reactors originally had relatively limited spent fuel storage. That was stopped during the Ford and Carter administrations for concerns associated with nonproliferation. And then the proposal to go to Yucca Mountain, but of course the Yucca Mountain program did not move forward.
President Obama has appointed a special panel to explore nuclear waste disposal. He did this last year, and a report is supposed to come out in a few weeks. If you were on that panel, what would you recommend?
First is we need to use spent fuel storage as a holding pen until we decide what kind of fuel cycle we want. So we support long-term storage of spent fuel. I would certainly recommend that it be done at centralized sites or in a repository where we could recover the spent fuel if we need it in the future. The other thing that is required is to change the repository program to get a repository and to get public concurrence and local approval of a geological repository. The one thing that has been demonstrated in repositories around the world is that countries that work with the local population have much greater success at siting repositories than countries where it's executive decree that the repository will be here. And if you take a look at the U.S., where we have a repository for weapons waste, that was done as a voluntary siting. Carlsbad, New Mexico, wanted the repository. It got the repository. New Mexico agreed to that repository with conditions. They received financial compensation. But they also received the right to do some of the regulation of that repository so the state government would feel comfortable that this facility was in their state.
Do you think a state would accept a repository, such a repository now, especially after seeing what's happening in Japan?
I think it's possible. I think we should not eliminate the option. Repositories have a couple of desirable features. The risks, the actual risks of a repository are very low. It results in an economic boom. It's recession-proof jobs of a high-technology type of job. And, it's a permanent form of employment for the local community. And, of course, that is why Carlsbad, New Mexico, wanted the site and why right now Carlsbad, New Mexico, is campaigning to get a spent fuel repository. They'd like a second repository because the first one was so profitable. It provides the economic basis for their community today.
You said you would want to store this spent fuel in a place where it could be recovered if it's needed in the future. What do you do with spent nuclear fuel in the future? What's it recovered for?
This would be recovered if we decided to reprocess the fuel to take advantage of its fuel value for power production. You can recover the plutonium and recycle it to reactors. Today, that is uneconomic because uranium is so cheap. But we don't know the future, so we would like to have the option to recover that spent fuel and recover the plutonium if needed in the future and if it appears to be the right policy for our children.
Finally, step back, take a look at the big picture, because the bigger question here is really, what's the future of nuclear power in the U.S.?
I think we're going to continue with nuclear. It'll be slower, but I think we will continue mainly because each of the options has major drawbacks. And as you go down the line of oil and gas and solar and coal, you find that none of those options are very attractive. In the real world, there are no ideal energy options. They're bad and worse. And I think in the end, nuclear will come out very favorable in that comparison.
So it's a Hobson's choice.
Yes, it really is.
But there are many people who'd say renewable energy, wind, solar. You're discounting a whole new emerging energy source that we're finally learning how to harness.
There's a central problem with renewables that has not been addressed. Wind primarily blows in the springtime, at night. Solar is primarily in the summer. Unfortunately, people like electric power in the fall and in the winter. And the problem is seasonal storage technologies that can store energy for 6 to 12 months. The technologies that are being looked at that can do that couple with nuclear power plants, but they do not couple with solar or wind. And thus, from a technical perspective, we may be in the situation where nuclear energy is the enabling technology for the large-scale use of renewables.
Charles Forsberg is executive director of the Nuclear Fuel Cycle Study at MIT. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England, and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.